Today on Vox Talks Economics, how can we ensure the world of the future? Welcome to the first of three special episodes of Vox Talks Economics, recorded at the Climate Change and Environment Conference in Paris, jointly organised by the AXA Research Fund and CEPR. My name is Tim Phillips.
Storm Boris is lashing large parts of Central and Eastern Europe. Torrential rains, high winds and flooding have killed people in Romania, Poland and Austria. Thousands more have been forced to flee as water levels are rising, washing away homes and livestock.
Storm Boris, which caused widespread destruction in Central and Eastern Europe in September 2024, is just the latest demonstration of how weather patterns are changing around the world. Is it the responsibility of governments to compensate those who lose their homes and businesses, or can the insurance industry step up to provide that service? And if it does, how many of us will buy that insurance? Thierry Longrenet of the NGO Les Ateliers du Futur, which specialises in helping firms to decarbonise, and Mathieu Godard, head of P&C at AXA France, were part of a panel that debated these questions at the conference. When I spoke to them afterwards, I began by asking Thierry how big the growth in weather-related disasters and losses has been.
Worldwide, we have four inflations contributing to the rise in natural catastrophe losses. The first one comes from monetary inflation, so to say, which we face in all sectors worldwide. The second source of inflation is wealth accumulation. People worldwide are more and more wealthy, and this is true also in Europe, obviously. And this adds to the capital to be insured and, of course, to losses. The third source of inflation is population migrating generally from low-risk areas to more exposed areas, such as the seaside or such as areas where droughts can be more frequent. And the last source of inflation is what I would call pure climate inflation, the increase in frequency and in severity of extreme weather events. All in all, we would say that an average of 7% of overall inflation is experienced, at least in Europe, over 10 years, out of which only 1% comes from the pure climate inflation. 7% accumulated means a doubling every 10 years.
And with all these losses, Thierry, how much of this is underinsured or completely uninsured?
In Europe, which is obviously one of the most developed areas in the world, we could think that the insurance penetration is large enough to take over the majority of this natural catastrophe risk from households and from corporations to the financial market. This is not the case. According to EIOPA and to the Geneva Association, roughly 25% only of these losses are regularly insured and indemnified by the insurance industry. And this average level varies widely depending on geographies and also depending on years, because in countries that have no or little cover, when huge events happen, obviously it creates a decrease in the average amount of insured losses.
Mathieu, we have this massive inflation in the amount of damages and claims, and we have this huge gap in what's insured. What strategic problems does this give to AXA?
I would say that the first issue that we're facing with the recurring events is the operational challenge that we have to cope with. Why? Because we have more events, they are more frequent, they are more severe. And from an operational point of view, we have to deal with massive amounts of claims coming up at the same time in sometimes a day or a week, where we have our customers turning back to us. And what do they want? They want us to be by their side, fixing quickly damages. Usually on top of that, we have, I would say, public authorities pressure somehow to be fast by the side, and it's quite natural to have this pressure. So this is the first challenge, the operational challenge. And I would like to stress the fact that in some cases, and I would like to take the example of Vichy, where we had a massive hailstorm some years ago, we have to deal also with the shortage of the necessary workforce to deal with those claims. Loss adjusters, for instance, or roofers. So at AXA, we have organized ourselves with a crisis cell, which brings together different professionals within our company. And our objectives are basically to be acting first with prevention messages before these events, sending millions of text messages every year. And then we have the, I would say, on-the-spot event to deal with the crisis, to be in a position to mobilize the professionals as fast as possible. And then we have, after each event, a systematic return on experience to be better for the next event. So this is the first challenge. And then the second one, obviously, and Thierry mentioned it, is the financials. How do we manage the covering of those claims costs for natural catastrophes? And how do we find a system which is acceptable for insurers in France? But I would like to say, thank God we are not alone, because I think we have a very good system in France, which is the natural catastrophe regime, which allows us to mutualize together with the CCR, the covering of those claims. And I think this is something very precious in France.
Climate change and environment is the name of one of CEPR's program areas. In our episode called Climate Change and the Environment, broadcast on the 19th of December 2023, you can hear Mara Guond, who leads the programme, and Beatrice Beda Di Mauro, the president of CEPR, discussing how climate is now part of every economist's research agenda.
We have many challenges to solve in the near future in the insurance market. Thierry, should we be looking for a situation in which everyone is fully insured against these increasing risks that are turning up?
The question you're raising, Tim, is about what is the raison d'être of insurance? We all know that financial institutions have at least two main roles. The first role is to help develop economies, activities through financing. But the second role is as important. It's to protect by taking over the risk from the businesses and from the households, not only for their short-term resilience, but also to create confidence for those who are financing these activities and these households. From a very practical standpoint, no bank would provide loans to a company or to a household, or at least not at the same price, if these companies and households were not insured against fire, storms, and the like. So insurer is contributing to confidence. As a consequence, yes, the ideal state is to be insured in order to reduce this operational risk and to reduce the price for funding. And the proof, so to say, of this concept has been, alas, given by bad experiences in the USA, where local states have been obliged to jump into the game, the insurance game, because without insurance, people were beginning to relocate and companies were starting also to relocate, which means an economic disaster. So insurance is there not only for short-term resilience, but also for long-term economic resilience and sustainability. So ideally, yes, insurance should be present to the maximum extent possible. But at some moments, there are limits due to the too high exposures and create too high risk, which prove unacceptable not only for individuals or for corporations, but also for the whole community, whatever solidarity exists. This is what we could call the hottest spots, where the exposure or vulnerability is so high that the society as a whole has a better interest to help relocate rather than stay as is and continue protecting at whatever price.
there is the issue of whether we should insist on mandatory insurance for individuals or companies or farms in some situations. Would you approve of that?
I think solidarity or mutualization is really key to face this climate challenge. Because otherwise, if you don't have this mutualization, the risk is far too high for the individuals or the corporate to face it at an acceptable price. So solidarity and mutualization is key. And by the way, this is the base of insurance. But there is more to that, because I think that we don't have a single a magic stick to solve this issue. The second thing that I would like to mention is prevention. Prevention is really key to be in a position to face this climate challenge. We have recently launched a study questioning CEOs of small companies in France to ask them about their feeling, their action plan with regard to the climate risk.
Mm-hmm.
The result is no surprise. Two-thirds of them consider that climate change has an impact on their operations. Two-thirds of them as well are already engaged or willing to engage on prevention actions, yet they would like to be supported to do so by professionals. And this is where also insurance companies, but not only, by the way, have a role, a key role to play to bring the awareness much higher on climate risks, specifically to your house or your corporate. And this is where it's more difficult to engage into taking concrete actions. And it goes through on-site visits. Technology can be leveraged as well to increase the awareness of the risk assessment and to take actions.
This becomes part of AXA's role, does it? To go to individuals or companies and to say, we're going to help you to take some actions to lower your risk, at which point we can then offer you the insurance at a price that you would want.
Our mission or raison d'être, as Thierry mentioned, is probably to be in a position to insure everyone, everywhere, and to provide solutions to do so at an acceptable price. Yet, in some situations, you need to take actions, and actions relate to prevention actions. But sometimes, and it's particularly true for corporates, the prevention actions would represent an immediate cost for a potential risk. So we need to find the right balance between the price that we would be willing to offer for the insurance, the prevention measures that we would recommend the corporate, for instance, to take. But the customers, should they be individuals again, or CEOs of companies or risk managers of companies, they need to be in a position to engage into this behavior, into those action plans.
Thierry, tell me a little bit more about mutualization, solidarity, as you called it. I understand by which this is a system by which some people will pay more for their insurance who run a low risk to make insurance affordable for people who run a high risk. This is part of the system in France. Is it politically feasible in all situations?
You're absolutely right, Tim. Subsidization is about bringing some margin from the less exposed people towards the most exposed people in order to reduce the slope of pure premiums, pure premiums being the pure risk premium. This is inevitable to keep affordability in the most exposed areas. Why is mandatory insurance necessary for that? Because the least exposed people have to contribute to this solidarity, to this cross-subsidization. And it can only happen if, first, insurance is mandatory, and second, price is controlled, meaning that competitive pressure is not the only name of the game. Because if competitive pressure only works, then all players will reduce premium to the maximum extent possible, and there's no any more margin to be transferred to the highly exposed. Is this politically feasible when you look at the situation worldwide? The answer is hardly.
Yeah.
In Europe, we only know two countries where this is, to some extent, developed, namely France and Spain.
Yeah.
In France, it's absolutely organized with various roles of the state. In Spain, it's not reinsurance, it's direct insurance with a public-private partnership as well. In all other countries, the answer is we don't want that. Hmm. Both from insurers or very often from public authorities and also from the people, the clients themselves. Why so? Because individualism leads to why should I pay for the people who don't take care of their resilience, who are, have decided to settle in a place they knew was highly exposed. I am not responsible for that. I will not pay for that. The limit of this is when crisis occurred. Why so? Because we all know that in front of the huge stress that people are exposed to, are experiencing, the insurer of last resort is always the state. So it transfers the stress to the state budget, to the public finances. And this, at one moment, becomes unacceptable. And then all stakeholders, insurers, people, and public authorities, to some extent, move towards a privately managed scheme to take the burden, so to say, of these extreme events. And I would like to give you a very telling example. In France, we have this huge solidarity system that works for everything but farmers.
Ah, not for farmers.
Not for farmers, not for crops. Who are the most exposed to natural catastrophe events?
Yes.
These farmers. Nevertheless, they refused to set up a compulsory insurance scheme whereby some would pay for others. It's culturally difficult sometimes to move and to build this kind of very efficient system.
Mathieu, I know that there are some markets in which it is very hard for any insurer, no matter how efficient, no matter how well run, to make any money. And some of the problems that we're seeing are places where you either cannot get insurance or there's very little competition for insurance. Is there an argument that insurers should be compelled to be in certain markets, or does that always have to be a commercial decision?
That's a tricky one that you're asking.
Yes.
I would rather refer to our example in France, and because this is a system that does work, and this is the system that I know best. And I think what we've found in France is the right balance between competition, mutualization, and involvement of public authorities to organize the solidarity among the population. And on the other way around, we can refer to what the example of the US, where you see in California that some of the insurance companies are escaping the market because they can't find the financial balance to make money that is necessary to be there in the long run. You see the same situation in Australia to some extent. But I think the right balance that we found in France is something that we need as a community to keep working on to optimize the system. Yet, what Thierry was mentioning is really true. The effort that every citizen is asked to provide to offer this shield against natural catastrophes needs to be accepted. For instance, with the increase that we are going to pass into insurance prices by early next year, they will see their share devoted to that in a household insurance roughly moving from 36 euros on average to 60 euros on average.
Oh.
So this will require from our distribution networks, this will require explanations. We'll need to explain that this money is the shield for the French population. And it's true that if you live on the fifth floor in a Paris building, you are not as exposed as someone living in an individual house next to the beach.
Mm-hmm.
Yet you will be contributing to protect your let's say your cousin living in Brittany. And we need to explain that, and we need to find the right balance to an extent where people accept this contribution, because at this stage, the most efficient one.
Look ahead 10 years, because the external trends are not going away. The question is, how are we going to cope with them? So imagine we're 10 years in the future and think about how that's going to change life for insurance companies and how that's going to change how we think of insurance and risk and how we as individuals or firms cope with it. Thierry, what do you think?
Insurers need at least four things to efficiently manage natural catastrophe events. First, as Mathieu mentioned, operational efficiency. And this operational efficiency is under stress during the huge natural catastrophe events, because mm-hmm. these extreme events are mobilizing everyone in a given area for a very short period of time. This stress will inevitably increase over time. The second key thing is to manage the average charge of losses. We know that this average amount of losses will increase. This average increase will vary widely depending on perils, depending on regions, and even depending on insured people. Farmers, for example, will be a very specific segment. And there, insurers face a model risk. The modeling of premiums becomes more and more tricky given the increase of parameters we don't know yet, because we don't have enough experience and we'll never have enough experience given the moving lines that we are working upon. Mm-hmm. So this is a key thing for our insurers, and it's one of the reasons why US insurers are flying away from certain regions.
Yeah.
The third area of challenge is obviously capital deviation management. This is already an issue outside France because of the higher and higher cost of extreme events. In France, for the moment, the state is providing a layer of reinsurance which is stable and favorable in terms of pricing. But elsewhere, this will become more and more an issue. And even reinsurers are decreasing their exposure in terms of deductible, so to say, retention. So insurers will also face a capital need that US insurers, for example, already face. And this is one of the reasons why they fly away. And the last aspect to anticipate is obviously affordability for the market, for the clients, cost of operational management, cost of average losses, cost of capital make the total premium that customers have to pay. This premium will rise. To what extent? And the question is not that important for the moment, because as Mathieu highlighted, on average in France, it's very affordable. But in 10 years' time, it will double. Mm-hmm. And for the most exposed customers, it will more than double. So the affordability of the climate risk premium is an issue we have to tackle through prevention. And I fully concur with Mathieu, who highlighted the importance of this topic, because protecting both the individual or the corporates and both the community in case of solidarity against this climate inflation can only be done through prevention. And prevention has two legs. The collective prevention leg, meaning the investment done by communities, region, and even the state, but also individual prevention, which is for the moment a dilemma because people are not that aware and sensitivized to individual prevention.
Mathieu, at risk of making this sound like a job interview, where do you see yourself in 10 years' time?
If I had to take a wish on where we would stand in 10 years, I would love us to be in a position where we will have leveraged technology to better assess risk in areas where natural catastrophes are higher, mm-hmm. that we will have managed to share this information with our insurers to bring them to take prevention actions. We are lucky enough to have large distribution networks that are close to our customers, and we need to have those conversations about prevention and risk assessments to be better fueled by analysis, and technology will help in that sense, I'm sure. And then there is also a point that we didn't touch upon so far, which mm-hmm. is to build back better. When a natural catastrophe occurs, taking the wish that we will make our contribution in building back houses, roofs, even cars in a way that is more respectful to Mother Nature, and bring our little contribution to slow down the climate change. And this is something also that insurance companies can not only investigate, but engage into.
We will talk again in 10 years' time. Mathieu, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you very much, Tim.
And Thierry, thank you as well.
Thank you, Tim.
The This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. In the run-up to COP29, we will be publishing two further episodes from the Climate Change and Environment Conference. So follow or subscribe to Vox Talks Economics today to make sure you don't miss them. Next week, filling the green transition funding gap.